The term infrastructure moved a few years ago from government circles to a broader audience. You hear political figures talk all the time about the need to invest in our infrastructure, put some more money into the physical structures that support our way of life. And the ones that get mentioned most often, roads and bridges. We got some hard lessons about the state of bridges when an interstate highway bridge collapsed in Minnesota a few years ago. Since that time, we've heard plenty about the state of bridges. Oregon's recent bridge conditions report shows some issues, but a better overall state of repair than a few years ago in a previous report. Two guests join us from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Bruce Johnson is the state bridge engineer on the phone from Portland. Bruce, welcome.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Gary Leeming is in the studio with me. He's a public affairs specialist. Welcome, Gary.
Hey, good morning.
So, first of all, Gary, we're talking bridges on state highways here, not any ones that are on county roads, et cetera?
Well, I think overall, we have state bridges. Obviously, the cities and the counties have bridges, too. So when we talk about the state of bridges, I think we're looking at, the whole palette.
All right. So Bruce Johnson, give us a thumbnail sketch here. This is actually a less dire report than one a few years back, I gather.
Well, we have some serious bridge problems in Oregon, but you're right. The structurally deficient number has been going down thanks to an influx of cash from the OTIA program. So we've made some strides in the condition of our bridges over, say, especially the last 7 years.
Infusion of cash from what program was that you mentioned?
It's the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, and it was passed by the Oregon legislature in 2004 and resulted in us repairing and fixing around 270 bridges.
And so how many bridges are we talking about total in the state of Oregon?
Total of about 6,000, and of those, as you and Gary alluded to, about 4,000 of those are on the local system, and 2,700 are the responsibility of the state highway department.
All right. So that's a significant amount of bridges, Dan. I mean, just because of where the population is and therefore we'd assume more roads are they clustered generally in the Portland area?
The majority of bridges in Oregon are on the west side of the Cascades. And you're right. In the higher population areas, we certainly have more bridges. But the largest share of bridges are sort of in the mid-Willamette Valley, what we call in ODOT our Region 2.
Yeah, Bruce is right. The OTIA program, and pardon the acronym, came about in the early 2000s because we found that we had some serious problems on our main freight routes. And you may have recalled us talking earlier about what was called the Riddle Effect. And that was the poster child of our bridge program back then is the Fords Bridge just north of Canyonville was load limited to such a point that major freight coming down the freeway to the Rogue Valley, for instance, they needed to offload and switch to get across the go through Riddle, actually, and not go over the Fords Bridge. And so that kicked off the program. And with that program, as Bruce mentioned, we repaired and replaced nearly 270 bridges, about 10% of the bridge inventory. And so it really focused on those main freight routes. And so that bought us time. But overall, you know, we still have a deficit in going into the future. A lot of our bridges were built in the 60s and 70s, and they've reached the end of their useful life. And I think Bruce at one point had said that if it was a person, we'd be throwing a retirement party for a lot of these bridges. So, the need is there. And so that was reflected in the 2015 report.
Given the where we stand both in time and in money and in general state of bridge repair, is this sort of a high point? I mean, are subsequent reports, Bruce, likely to be a little less glowing about the general state of Oregon bridges?
That's exactly right. That's what we anticipate. And in the 2015 report, we bring that fact out. I would say that we're maybe at a crossroads here, or we're at a juncture where we could continue to make improvements, or bridge conditions are going to go down very rapidly from here. And we're predicting that they are, in fact, going to go down very rapidly. Even though we've made some great improvements due to the OTIA funding and in the last, 7 to 10 years, That was a bonded program, and we're now paying back those bonds, so our regular funding program is greatly reduced. And as Gary indicated, so many of our bridges were built what we call during the interstate era 40 years ago, and they're reaching the end of their design life. So we expect bridge conditions to go down very rapidly without another increase in funding. Right now we're seeing, say, 12 bridges per year going into what we call the structurally deficient category. And within 3 to 4 years, we expect that number to jump to two or three times that number of bridges are going to be turning structurally deficient every year and need to have serious major work to keep mobility going the way it is in Oregon now.
We're talking about the bridges of Oregon with a couple of guests from the Oregon Department of Transportation. You just heard Bruce Johnson, who's the state bridge engineer, on the phone from Portland. Gary Leeming is a public affairs specialist based in the Medford area here in the studio with me. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions and maybe some comments about particular bridges that you drive over every day. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area by phone. 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. So, Gary, we were talking about the ODIA funding, and then Bruce was saying that it's now in, it sounds like you're paying a fair amount in debt service to repay the bonds. So has the program ended? I mean, is there no?
Yes, the program has ended, and we completed the last bridge just last year. And so in addition to that bonded debt that we're paying on, we've also seen funding being uncertain and reduced from the at the federal level. We have not seen a long-term transportation package come out of Congress in many years. And so when you combine those two, a lot of the load is now being switched over to the state level to keep our public works, I like to use the word public works.
Quote fingers here, I should point out.
Right. Instead of infrastructure, because a lot of people, when you say the word infrastructure, their eyes glaze over and, they're not really into it. But I think it's an apt description in the sense that when we invest in these type of public works projects, whether it be a highway, bridge, water, sewer, the long-term benefit is great. And we have really used up the vision and the capital of previous generations when we do look at, say, the interstate system or the highway system and bridges. We just in our area alone, we have many bridges. I was thinking driving down here, just the Caveman Bridge, for instance, in Grants Pass, a beautiful, iconic bridge to not only Grants Pass.
And some concrete arches and everything.
Concrete arches, a classic Condi McCullough Bridge. We have that scheduled for a major fix in the next couple of years, everything from filling the cracks to redoing the deck to bumping out the columns or the rails so that it accommodates ADA capacity. And so, we have that scheduled, but there's a lot of bridges that, are not that iconic, but are workhorses that we use every day.
Bruce Johnson, give us a sense of just how aggressive the bridge and road building program was after World War II. You get the sense that everybody had something going up near them for a long time there, for a couple decades.
Yes, that's really true. There was a large investment at the federal level during the construction of the interstate, and that certainly occurred in Oregon. We were building bridges at a much, much higher rate than we have been, say, in the last 20 years. And I would say about 60% of the bridges we have on the state system were built during that time. And that's the large population that is now reaching the end of their design life and needs some major work. Just to give you some numbers, we expect over the next 20 years, about 900 of our bridges are going to require some major rehabilitation to keep them functioning safely. And if we project our funding, we have enough funding to address maybe 300 of those. So there's 600 bridges in the next 20 years that we are not sure right now how we're going to be able to maintain those at the current level that we have.
All right, the term that often gets used, and you have used it yourself here, is structurally deficient. And for those of us who aren't engineers, what does that mean about a bridge?
Well, we rate a bridge when we inspect it in three areas, the driving surface, the deck, the superstructure or the girders, and then the foundations or the piers. One of those three elements have to be rated a 4 on the federal system, which means it has major deterioration that can affect the load capacity. So what structurally deficient means, the bridge is still safe. We're looking at it very closely. But it's one of those in the category that I mentioned of 900 bridges that need some major work. So structurally deficient is an indication that major work is needed. And that's what we anticipate increasing in numbers over the next 20 years to a point where it's much greater than we can handle with our current funding level.
Is there a point at which it's cheaper to replace a bridge than to repair it?
Oh, that's certainly true. It's kind of like an older automobile. It is possible to restore an old, worn-out automobile, but a lot of times it costs more than a new car to restore it. And the same thing is true on bridges. There are some things that we can do to maintain conditions and extend the life, but at a certain point, the load capacity goes below what is safe. And then it's normally cheaper to replace a bridge with modern materials that can last longer at a cheaper cost than it is to restore them.
Gary Leeming had some thoughts.
I was just going to say, you hear these reports, you know, structurally deficient. What does that mean? I always kind of couch it in terms of a house. You know, you buy a house and it's got a leaky roof or the foundation is crumbling. You know, a wall is sagging. That's structurally deficient. You also hear functionally obsolete. What does that mean? You know, using the house metaphor again, if you're a newlywed, you have like a very small house, maybe a two-bedroom house. The kids come along, and you're still in the house. The fact of the matter is you kind of outgrown that house, but you're still living in it. So, you know, that in my mind, my term is functionally obsolete. You're still living there. It's safe, but it's a little crowded. And so in a bridge sense, it means maybe the lanes are too narrow. It can't carry some of the heavier trucks. And then getting back to Bruce's point on structurally deficient, you know, the deck may be deteriorated. The substructure, the superstructure needs to be fixed. You know, it really goes to the value of that bridge and trying to bring it up so you can use it for all different modes.
We're talking about bridges in the state of Oregon with two folks in the Oregon Department of Transportation. Gary Leeming, public affairs specialist, is in the studio with me here. Bruce Johnson, the state bridge engineer, is on the phone from Portland. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. When we talk about weight limits, though, I mean, weight limits, particularly in the interstate system, have increased over the years, haven't they, Bruce?
Well, if you go back a long ways, it's true, they have increased. And the main time that happened in Oregon was in the 80s. But since then, we have been designing for the higher weight limit bridges in Oregon. Problem is, over half of our bridges were built prior to that time. And
well, I guess that's what I'm asking is if the weight limit, and granted, this would have been hard because Oregon would have been the anomaly among states that kept moving up to 80,000 pounds plus. But if they'd stayed at, I don't know, 65,000, 70,000, might some of these bridges have lasted longer?
We believe that that's the case. We don't have any hard research evidence to support that. But what we see on bridges due to the higher load is a greater incidence of cracking. And the bridges vibrate more. That is, they have greater deflection with the higher loads.
Anybody ever standing on a bridge knows exactly what you're talking about when a truck goes over. There's a real wobble to it, yeah. A couple of emails here. Mike in Medford asks, is there any update on Medford's I-5 viaduct? It seems 2 years have gone by without an update on the comment period. As you probably know, the viaduct is a blight on the city, its economy, and vital habitat in Bear Creek. This monstrosity needs to be cut or tunneled, says Mike. While we don't have the population of the north, with Portland getting advanced multimodal bridges with a fireworks show, we don't have weekend bus service. Mike in Medford, a number of complaints, not all of them ODOT-related, Gary Leeming.
Right. I was going to say I can only take to the one on the bridge. Yes. Yeah, so what he's speaking to is the planning and environmental study that we've just kicked off. We have a consultant on board, and we haven't really taken it out to the public yet. We're still working internally on working on our team and the scope of our project, and also stakeholder lists and building those things up. So we're really in the infancy of that project. And so this will be a multi-year project to study the bridge, any kind of parallel routes on the city. What can we do to extend the life of that bridge? What would it look like down the road if we replaced that structure or modified it? So there's lots of unanswered questions that we need to explore, and obviously the community will be a part of that. And you're right. I mean, when we first unveiled this, this was actually about a couple of years ago, and so it's been a slow process, but we're starting to pick up speed and get off the ground on that. And so you're right. The viaduct is a major choke point on the I-5 corridor. It's a major choke point in Medford. We're trying to keep it as clear as possible. Any kind of incident on that bridge ties up traffic. We can debate the history on it, the advisability of that transportation planning piece done nearly 60 years ago. And it shows, though, when you plan transportation infrastructure or public works, there are long-term consequences to that. So you want to get it right. You just don't want to think that you have the right answer today, because tomorrow it may not be the right answer.
And it certainly has captured the attention of people at the highest level of Oregon state government. Kate Brown, her first visit to Medford as governor, addressed the viaduct on that visit. If you don't know Medford, it's pretty obvious. A 0.6 mile of Interstate 5 freeway with no shoulders. And it just carries over the rooftops of the heart of downtown Medford. Email here from Wolfgang in Sunny Valley. He says, I wonder how, with all the clearly unnecessary, overblown, and annoyingly oversized on- and off-ramp projects, you can regain enough credibility to overcome the slogan, your tax dollars at waste. Well, it actually says your tax dollars at work, but he's taking a little twist on that. Bruce Johnson, big on-ramps and off-ramps. What do you make of that?
Well, you know what? I've seen a lot of cases where small improvements in traffic handling capacity makes a big difference in the ability of highways to carry traffic. And those improvements come at entries and exit points. So the ramps are important. The configuration of them is important. And they make a big difference in how traffic flows. And one of the big problems we have in Oregon, in addition to bridge conditions projected to go down very rapidly, is a congestion in some of our major urban areas. And these ramps are important for that.
The other thing to note is when we do an interchange project or, you know, replace a bridge, especially an interchange project, you know, we're looking at a 20-year period. We're not really fixing it for that day, but we're also projecting out 20 years because we want to invest our resources wisely. So when we do come back in time, that we've projected correctly. Sometimes we miss it because it is a projection. Sometimes we don't.
So you're trying not to build it for next week and then have it be obsolete once the
exactly.
once the tape is cut. Dan in Talent has a question. He says, I have not observed any light rail or other public transport infrastructure built into the new bridges. Wouldn't it make sense to build rail crossings into new bridges, have a master plan to follow? Building infrastructure for an outdated fossil fuel-based system doesn't seem too intelligent. But so, Bruce Johnson, what are we talking about if we tried to add a light rail component to just about every bridge? You're talking a lot more expense, aren't you?
It would be a significant expense, but it would be worthwhile in areas where light rail is an effective transportation system. ODOT, in fact, has a major initiative on right now in the multimodal area and intermodal, and we're looking very closely at various types of transportation modes whenever we do a new project. This is an effort that's been going on for about a year now, and we're getting to the point where intermodal considerations are becoming a part of our everyday work. So where there's opportunities, we fully intend to take advantage of that and use various funding sources to come together to leverage the work that we do so we can take advantage of those multimodal opportunities.
Is that Union Pacific or Amtrak I hear outside?
Cue the music.
Really?
Cue the sound.
All right, so
just
go ahead.
Let me just add on to that. So a prime example of that topic, and obviously we're not talking light rail, but when we do these improvements, we have to work from a plan. So we just don't go out and, you know, say, yeah, I think that's going to be a three-lane structure. We work from a plan. And like Bruce said, we look at different modes to incorporate into that. So if you look at, for instance, the Phoenix Interchange or anything that's been improved in the last, say, decade, we're adding sidewalks, we're adding bike lanes. You know, we're really looking at is there some transit opportunities where we can work a bus stop. So we're consulting our different partners when we look at these enhancements to our system, or even if we have something where we have simply a fix-it, we're looking at those different modes to improve that. 99 corridor would be a prime example.
Now, to the issue of what happens for the next few years, though, you've already mentioned Congress and hard to get money out of them. Congress is even tripping over the passage of short-term transportation packages and even making sure there's enough money in the Highway Trust Fund. Given that, I mean, are you just kind of having to deal with Oregon resources for the moment and not even think about the federal ones being available?
Well, it's certainly the funding picture in the future is very unclear. And so where we can look locally, statewide, we can find hopefully better certainty there than in Washington.
Okay. Well, the Bridges Report shows some needs this year, but may show more next year. We'll have to check back in a year with Bruce Johnson, the state bridge engineer, and Gary Leeming, public affairs specialist, both at the Oregon Department of Transportation. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.